Whoa, you went no contact with your family? Like, you don't talk to them at all?
Nope,
because they're toxic as fuck. Are you also the villain for walking away from your toxic family in order to preserve your peace? Welcome to the Character Outs podcast, where I am on a mission to normalize going no contact with toxic family. Welcome, all you terrible people. Let's talk about it. Welcome back to the Character Outs podcast. My name is Terry. I'm so happy you're here. And I have with me someone extremely fascinating, interesting, who I think is going to help a lot of you out there. Coming from a toxic family, he has this fantastic way of merging the science behind trauma and what it does to our mind and our body. And I'd like to welcome Cody Isabel. Let me tell you a little bit about him first. Cody is a seasoned entrepreneur at the forefront of AI and mental health. Armed with a degree in cognitive behavioral neuroscience and trained in IFS psychotherapy, he is the founder and CEO of Mind Brain Body Lab. This groundbreaking mental health AI community specializes in bridging the gap between AI and human experience. Cody also heads My Companion, a public benefit corporation, providing a free 24/7 conversational AI companion for healing complex PTSD. Cody. Okay. Terry. First of all, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
If I had your credentials, I would walk around like the cockiest bitch in the world. I'd be like, I'm a scientist. I am so smart. But you're not only smart, but you're humble. You just want to help people. You're cool as fuck. And I found you on Instagram. I found you on this reel where you're kind of volleying and you're like, I was raised by a narcissistic mother. Of course I have this. Of course I behave this. Of course they think you're mad at me. And I was like, oh my God. So I liked it, of course. And then I reached out to you and I looked at your profile. I was like, oh, he's not like just a digital creator. Like, you actually are taking the science. That was fascinating. So fascinating. So welcome. So tell me the story of how you got started and what first attracted you to the human brain and all of that.
For sure. Yeah. I think we talked about this the other day, but when I was in like, it had been like middle school, there was this exhibit that came to my middle school that was like this blow up human body, kind of like a bouncy house, like how that blows up with like the Eric Cannon things. It's kind of similar to that, but like a human body. And then we got to walk through it and like learn about the body systems and stuff. And you walk into the head at first and see the brain and all the stuff. And at the very end, I had noticed that throughout the whole exhibit, there were all these yellow lines all over the place. And I asked my teacher, Miss Russell, I believe, what is all this? And she's like, oh, those are nerves. I was like, where do they come from? She's like, they come from the brain. I was like, what do they do? She's like, they control everything. And I was like, what? Why would we study anything else? And I've been studying it pretty much ever since then.
That is amazing. And I told you when we told me that story, I was like, I would walk through the brain and be like, that's a pretty color yellow. You know, like the fact that you were like, what does it do? So have you found yourself just constantly asking questions? And then tell me about how that evolved, how you stayed on the same course. Like, that's fascinating.
Yeah, I've always liked asking questions more than I like talking, because I just like to get to know things and figure things out. So I found that questioning is really good for that. So I've just always been curious, poking things. Maybe I shouldn't poke sometimes, but still learning along the way. And yeah, I stayed curious in that the whole. I got into some advanced courses in high school, like some college courses. In Blue Springs, where I went to high school, or whatever, they had some really cool. Like, it was called Project Lead the Way. And it was this really cool program for getting into medical science and things like that early. And that was so fun. I learned so much in those courses, got to do really cool stuff, studied in college. And in college, I got really interested in inflammation and the immune system. And that's where my research is today. Wow. In relation to, I played college basketball and I got some concussions, traumatic brain injuries. And so I was kind of fascinated, like, what's happening inside of my brain right now. Yeah. And I was like understanding that physical trauma to your brain, how that affects the immune system of your brain and how your brain heals and all that kind of stuff. And then I started to understand, because the other half of a concussion is the mental health side, because you're a college athlete that's sitting on the bench who looks completely fine while everyone else who's injured has crutches, has a cast, has all these. And so you're sitting there, people are like, I mean, it's pretty hardcore in college. Like, are you being like soft or whatever? It's kind of the perspective, but, and you look totally fine because it's all in your head. Literally, it's in your skull. So there was the mental health side and the physical brain trauma side. And that's where I was kind of like, oh, this mental health side is interesting. I wonder how that affects the mind, brain, and body. And it turns out that mental and emotional trauma can do just as much, sometimes worse damage to your brain and instigate similar mechanisms in your immune system, endocrine system in relation to like brain trauma, and physical changes to your brain, after going through not just physical brain trauma from a TBI, but also mental, emotional, psychological abuse, like trauma. When people say trauma, that's usually what they're talking about. So
Right.
that's, it's kept me fascinated ever since. So I dove deeper into psychoneuroimmunology, which is the study of all of these things. Like if you want to put a big fancy word to it. And so that's kind of where I'm at today. You applying that research, I've always been more of a like applied neuroscientist, if you will, or a like a practical neuroscientist, where like getting out into the real world and doing stuff with people. I'm not the white coat in the lab type of guy. So that's kind of where we're at and where we came from.
Yeah, awesome. So I know about that cool thing on your wrist, but tell everyone about that cool thing on your wrist and how you use it to help your clients.
Okay, yeah, sure. So the body gives a lot of really interesting signals, like your heart rate, your blood oxygen, your body temperature, sleep, stress, strain. There's all sorts of information you can gather on the body. And because your body holds your nervous system and your nervous system holds your mind, measuring what's going on in the body can be a helpful predictor and mechanism to gauge what's happening in your mind, in your brain, in your body, or in your nervous system. And so this is a Whoop device, and all of my clients, whenever I work with them, they get a Whoop device. And so I'm able to measure all of that stuff in their body and then customize what I do with them, their program, like the type of therapy I work on, the missions I give them, all the different things. This informs actual data, informs the mental and emotional healthcare that I'm giving to people. And it also provides like an objective measurement of mental and emotional health in some way.
Crazy.
Like it's not perfect yet, and there's a lot of research, more research that needs to be done. But I mean, it's what always has driven me crazy about driven, droven, whatever,
Driven.
me crazy about mental and emotional health. It's like you go to the doctor, you break your arm, you go to the doctor, you could go to 20 different doctors. They'll X-ray your arm and say, yeah, your humerus is snapped in half, your ulna is snapped in half, whatever. Objective measurement, X-ray. You could go to 20 or 30 different therapists or counselors or psychologists, and you could get any number of different diagnoses and things like that, because there's not really a hardcore, like objective measurement yet. So I'm really passionate about being able to create that, and this is the first step that I'm trying so far.
Wow, that is fascinating. And when we were speaking last week, you said that the real therapy happens in the in-between stages. So tell me about that.
Yeah. I mean, this is true for just about anything, like learning, just even thinking about learning. Like you go and practice like piano, or you have a piano recital, but then there's practice in between the piano recital and the next recital. And that's where a lot of the learning's happening. And then even when you're learning just in general, when you're asleep is when you're actually doing the real learning. Like the memory mechanisms of your brain replay what you did like thousands, hundreds of thousands of times. Thousand times faster than you took it in to like sear in that neural network when you're asleep. So it's not even what's happening when you're practicing, it's like all the stuff happening between. And so if you bring that over to therapy, you bring that over to like coaching, therapy, anything like that, same concept. When I'm working with somebody in a session, sure, I can be super helpful and I can be there and we can talk through with their parts and different things like that. But what I noticed is that they're not having a panic attack in front of me. Right? The panic attack is happening when they're at home at night and like they've had a long day and now they're like their thoughts start to race,
Processing. Yeah.
or they're laying in bed before and they can't fall asleep because their thoughts are racing and things like that. And so
Right.
meeting, I just noticed lots of people need help in between sessions more than they need help like in a session, I'm there to help. But between
Yeah.
sessions, there's so many things. Like, what missions do you have? Like, what activities could you do? What questions are coming
Right.
up? Like, what are things that you could do to, if you're anxious, like calm your thoughts down. If you're like
Yeah.
more depressive, bring your thoughts up, and help with that in between, the glue between sessions and things like that.
Yeah. So I'd love to pick your brain on trauma responses and particularly how they pertain to us who come from a toxic family, have been raised by a narcissistic parent, and we have all this shit in our backpack. And, you know, how, first of all, can you define some of the trauma responses so that we feel normal? Because I think that's half the battle. You know, we have these innate trauma responses that come out, and we're like, shit, like, oh, sometimes we can act like our narcissistic mother, or, you know, and then we feel guilty about it, right? So do a little bit of normalizing and talk to me about trauma responses.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a nuanced and difficult question, because if you think about like what is trauma, like different things are traumatic to different people. And so like
Yeah.
it almost starts at like the base of like what is trauma. The way that I kind of try to think about it is, imagine if your house is on fire. That could be traumatic to you, because like there's the event, which is the house is on fire. Your experience of that event is, crap, I gotta go get my kids, I gotta get my stuff, I gotta get a dog, I gotta do all this stuff, and you're freaking out. It's just three E's: event, experience, effect. The effect of that could be trauma or something like an anxiety disorder or panic or PTSD or something like that afterwards. But if
Yeah.
you're a firefighter or a firewoman running into that fire, it's the same event, but the experience is completely different because it's the fifth fire they've run into that night, and the effect builds resilience. And so trauma can be different in different ways. And then there's chronic, acute, and vicarious trauma. And so just understanding some of these basic terms can be super helpful to understand trauma responses. So acute trauma is like the house fire or a natural disaster or a terrorist attack, something huge, one single event that's like, holy crap. Chronic is more like what it's like to have a narcissistic parent or be in an abusive relationship, those like a toxic relationship of any kind, or experience neglect as a child, things like that. That can lead to complex PTSD and a whole host of different things. Because it's just chronic over time, lower self-esteem, difficult time trusting people, all sorts of stuff. And then vicarious, that's more people in the mental health profession. Well, it's not really just a mental health profession, even because even empaths can kind of pick up on stuff. But vicarious trauma is like, if you're watching the news a ton and you're seeing all this crazy stuff, and it's really, really sad, scary, like type of stuff, you start to pick up and take on that energy, take on some of that trauma. This is also similar for like generational trauma, or like legacy burdens that people talk about. Or I mentioned the therapist, like mental health space, because it's huge, like therapist burnout and like compassion burnout and all sorts of stuff. That's vicarious trauma. If you're not doing your own work as a mental health person, then all of the things you're seeing and experiencing and working through with people can start to affect you in a vicarious way. So those are the three E's and then the types of trauma. And so then when you start to think about how this could affect you longer term, it's a blend of like your psychology and your nervous system is like how you kind of respond to certain things. At first, your nervous system is in a green state. You're chilling, like you're rest and digest. You're not hyper anxious or hyperactivated, I should say. And you're in a healing state. You're parasympathetic is what that's called. Eventually, everybody needs to go up into like the yellow zone, which is like your sympathetic state, which is not inherently bad. I hear this all the time. People are like, oh, we have to get to parasympathetic. It's like, okay, yeah, but you can't walk up a flight of stairs if you're not in your sympathetic nervous system. Like, you can't go work out if you're not in your sympathetic nervous system. So it's not black and white. Your nervous system is like a flow and a balance. And so the normal healthy flow is going into some sympathetic energy. Like you're going to work out, you're going to lift some weights, and you have to put more blood in your muscles to be able to do those workouts or bench press or whatever it is. And then you come back down after your workout. What do? You rest, you chill, and you recover. You like eat the right foods, all the stuff, so your muscle can grow back stronger. And so in that way, you're like going up and then coming down, but building resilience and building strength, which is good. What can start to happen in trauma is you get to this place where, like, especially chronic trauma, where you are constantly, your nervous system is constantly activating, and it doesn't get to come back down to green. And so instead of going from green to yellow. Now it's going from yellow to extreme yellow, or even maybe up into red, which is like a freeze response. But this yellow energy is your fight and flight energy, if you will, where you're nervous, worried, anxious, scared, if you're on the flight side, or you're angry, frustrated, mad, more of like the aggressive stuff on the flight side, or sorry, fight side. And so as you get further up that yellow, what starts to happen is eventually your nervous system, you activate, but you're so far in yellow that when you come down, you're still in yellow at the bottom. And so then you're going yellow to yellow, yellow to yellow, yellow to yellow, and the baseline of your nervous system activation has just increased. Then, if it stays chronic, you can get up into red, and red is that like freeze response, which is again your parasympathetic nervous system. But this time it's like, Terry, we need to chill, and it pulls this lever, and it completely stops you in your tracks, like possum do this. That's how you say plural possum. Possum do this whenever they play dead. It's super common. Or like sheep, I think the ones that when they get scared, they like, oh, freeze, and pass out.
What
They like freeze, yeah,
do
and they like pass out or whatever. And this is their parasympathetic nervous system freezing them so that they chill. So this could look like depression, hopelessness, like preparation for death is what, if you're looking at like the literature, kind of looks like a little bit. And so that's like that freeze spot where you're so activated, you're like, oh crap, this is not good. There's also one, like a fawn response people talk about,
Yeah, I've
is
heard
being
that
talked about
lately.
more, which is, yeah, this is, I see this a lot in trauma bonds, because it's a fawn response to stop the abuse or whatever it is going and like loving and getting closer and like trying to like fawn to stay safe. It's all about safety. So those are kind of the four little states. And then when you're coming down, we can talk about healing, because that's a whole different thing, like coming down and how do you get back to green. But those are kind of the states of your nervous system, and each of those states can create different behaviors. So like flight state, nervous, worried, anxious, scared, that can create all anxious attachment, difficult time trusting people, low self-esteem. The fight side can create reactive abuse, which is what you're kind of alluding to earlier, where you're being abused so hard that your nervous system is like, yeah, fuck this, and it's like, let's go. And you start to be the abusive one, but you're not. It's reactive abuse, and it's a defense mechanism. People pleasing could be another one that could be more of like a fawn type behavior, if you will. An empath is a similar one. All of these types of things, these different like personas that we take on, whether it's people pleasing or an empath, are to keep you safe in some way, and protect you in some way from some deeper, scarier emotion most of the time, or scarier trauma. Like people pleasing could be defending you from like abandonment or rejection. If I please everyone around me, they'll never leave me. Or the or a perfectionist, shame could be a huge one for a perfectionist part of you, that's trying to protect you from shame or humiliation or guilt. And so that if I just make everything perfect, I can't fail. And if I don't fail, I'll never be embarrassed, and my mom or dad will still love me, type of thing. So that was a lot at once, but
Now,
any questions in so far?
fascinating, fascinating. I always love when I'm struggling with something to get to the root of it. And so, how would you encourage your clients or anyone listening, if they have that type of trauma response, whatever it looks like in them, in their life, how, I know it's so complex, there's no way we could possibly cover all of it, but what would be your top three things that you would do if someone is knows that they're in this trauma response? How can they get to the root of it? Because I feel like getting to the root, once we understand and know, then that can be the gateway to healing. So how would you encourage someone to grab hold of that?
I love it. First couple things, you got to safety, getting your body budget correct, and then doing some parts work would be the three things that I would suggest. So safety is, you've got to create, your nervous system is like clamped around this trauma or whatever. And this is why talk therapy doesn't work a lot of times for trauma. Yeah, I get this question all the time. I'm huge on this because it drives me crazy. But if you think of trauma as like being like this balled up piece of paper in between my hands, it's trapped in there. That part of you is trapped in there, that trauma, and your nervous system is locked around it. Okay, because your nervous system is like, okay, this is not safe. We've got to protect Carrie. So it keeps it locked around, the trauma and that vulnerable part of you. And so what you've got to be able to do is create some external safety first and foremost. If you are in the middle of a war zone, not good. If you're still in an abusive relationship, not safe. If you are, right, this is why no contact is really, really important. If you are no contact, but your friend group is still predicting you back into your old behavior. I mean, let's look at human behavior. Like the biggest predictor of your mental and emotional health and your behavior is your environment. And so you might be Terry 2.0, but all of your friends expect you to be Terry 1.0. And so they predict you back into old habits, behaviors, routines, places, people's thing, all the stuff. And so you default to the mean of the people around you. And so that's just as unsafe of an environment to your nervous system as the abusive relationship itself sometimes, which is kind of a wild concept. But once people start to realize this and they become aware, it's like, oh, it's not just this one area of my life that I have let these types of people into it. Like, oh crap. And so there's a lot of like external safety. That's like the first huge step of that. Once you have that external safety, your nervous system is like, oh, okay, we can loosen up a little bit and open up just a tiny bit. Mm-hmm. Then internal safety, you're starting to figure out, okay, like how do I, it can literally be like a safe place inside of you. Like EMDR is huge on like safe spaces and things like that inside of you. And having a safe like mental space that you can go to. Like I have a treehouse for myself. The other area, like somatic experiencing, is huge, is really big on a safe part of your body. So a lot of times, like people use like the tip of their nose or their earlobe or some part of their body that's not in pain, that they're not scared of, like things like that, because we get in our heads a lot when we're trying to process trauma and we don't figure out what's happening in our body. So creating a safe like part of your body where you don't, like for me, I store a lot in my shoulders and traps and stuff, some of my chest and things. I feel you. It's a really common one.
And then I don't even know I'm like this, you know, it's like
100%. And so probably not the safest place to store freedom and like free energy, right? Or a safe spot of my body for me, but my like cheek or my ear or whatever could be a safer spot because it feels safer. And starting to create some internal safe places so that you can start to get into this sympathetic energy. Because what happens when you're chronically stressed and in these toxic relationships is your nervous system gets to that red zone like we just talked about. And as you start to heal, you don't just mystically jump to green. You have to go through the yellow, through sympathetic again. And so if you remember, that is anger, frustration, anxiety, fear, worry, all a concern, like all of these big, big sympathetic emotions. And so as people are coming out of red, a lot of the time what starts to happen is they get scared. And so they have to beat the fear of fear. And that's a huge part of being, creating that internal safety is learning how to manage and work with that fear as you're, because that's your nervous system coming back online. Which is a weird, a weird thing to think about, but you've been so zonked out in the free zone that you don't even remember what it feels like to have these things in your body. And so it freaks you out. And so then you shoot back to red because you get too activated and you don't get to the other side of the fear. And so that's, I love to use the concept, like you can face everything and rise. That's one way you can describe fear, or you can fuck everything and run. And if fuck everything and run, you shoot back to red. If you face, if you face it and you get through it and you create that safety and start to like, you can either flood or you can kind of do gradual. I generally suggest gradual. Some people are more like down to flood and like, let's just do all of this scary energy all at once and just try like one giant bolus of it. What I would generally suggest, however, is gradual diving into something that's a little bit scary and just training yourself. Oh, okay. Just that like 5% of my total fear I can handle. And then the next time, okay, 10% I can now handle, 25, 30, right? And you kind of escalate until you're fully past it. That's creating internal safety. And that will open up your nervous system a ton. And then the final piece in relation to, or not the final piece, but the next step is like getting your body right, getting your body budget right. Because a lot of the times people come to me and they're like, I'm anxious. And I was like, okay, well, have you slept in the last 3 days? No, not very much. Okay. How are you eating? I mean, McDonald's and like the general American diet.
Right.
Got it. Have you seen other humans in the last 7 days? No, I've been alone by myself. Got it. Have you played? Have you like done anything fun to just play and completely forget about anything?
Yeah.
No, I have not done that. Okay. Are you exercising? No. Doing anything for stress reduction? No. Any type of mindfulness, meditation, anything at all, like breath work, anything? No. I was like, okay, surprise, surprise. You're anxious. Like that. But that's a body budget thing, not generalized anxiety disorder. Okay. And so
Okay.
like that's huge. And that creates a state of unsafety in your body as well, just chemically,
Yeah.
biochemically. If your body budget is off, you are going to
Yes.
feel anxious or depressed or different things. Even me, sometimes on the
Yeah.
weekends, I stay up later than I usually do outside of my circadian rhythm, like window. And I wake up the next day feeling like crap. I'm a little bit more anxious. Like I can just
Yeah.
feel my chest.
Yeah, that's how you
And
hold it.
so it's just like, crap, this is not real anxiety. It's because my sleep is messed up. And so that's the next step, is getting those areas. I call it the hero's body. Getting those areas like in alignment, which is perfect, especially if you got out of an abusive relationship or something like this, you're trying to heal.
Yeah.
These are great things to spend your mental energy on, creating habits, patterns, or routines in.
Yeah.
Creating a morning and night routine to help your sleep, making sure you're able to get like 7 to 9 hours a night, starting to
Yeah.
do some type of exercise routine, starting to figure out, okay, how do I want to eat differently? What can I do for stress reduction? What things are fun to me? Do you want to go do cooking classes? Do you want to go on a helicopter ride? Do you want to learn how to play piano? Do you want to learn how to salsa dance? Like, what's fun to you? Go do that. And it's a really good pathway for people. As they're trying to heal their nervous system. And it just so happens, as they're creating those habits, patterns, routines, they're healing their body budget, which when your body is healthy, right, your nervous system is planted in your body. So if your body is a toxic wasteland, surprise, surprise, your nervous system is going to be inflamed. But if your body is fertilized, awesome soil, your nervous system is just as healthy and your mind is just as healthy. And so that's step two, is like your body. And then the third one's parts work, which we can dive further into if you'd like. That's a whole thing in itself. Any questions about what I just said, though?
So a couple things that I love that you really, in all that you do, you tie together the physical and the mental. And I think so many of us who have dealt with complex PTSD, we're scared and we have this innate fear in us. And I love how you talk about how, well, let's look at it from the body perspective, right? If I broke my leg, I would give myself some grace and say, listen,
Yes.
you're on the couch, you need crutches, right? I would say, I wouldn't look at my physical therapist and say, well, I can't do it. Like, no, like there's so much more out there about the body and how it recovers. And it's scary, but it's less scary because okay, I can do it, right?
Right.
But when it comes to our mental healing, we can get so stuck, right? Like I can get so stuck and think, well, no, I'm just scared. Like I don't want to face that. Like I can't do it. Like I'm just gonna, And so I love how that was really empowering for me to hear you say is like, no, I got to look at it personally. If I'm very afraid of something, well, would I be afraid of physical therapy? No. We can't be afraid to face everything. And the other thing that I love that you said was that Terry, you said Terry 1.0 and Terry 2.0. And I feel like being such a people pleaser with the narcissistic parent, we've never put ourselves first. We've always modified. We've always done whatever they wanted to do. It's always been selfish to make boundaries, right? And like you said, we have a tendency to collect people in our life who are toxic, and we just want to make excuses because we want to be the nice girl and we don't want to ruffle any feathers. And I have found recently, as I'm growing, as I'm healing, people, behaviors that were appropriate yesterday are not acceptable for Terry 2.0. But I feel like we can gaslight ourselves. Like I'll gaslight myself and go, oh, well, yeah, sure. You fucking cut everybody else off. So who do you think you are? Like, yeah, you're the common denominator. You're the fucking problem. But I love that you said, as we heal, basically, as we heal, we need to pay attention, right? To the people who are embracing this new 2.0 version of us. Otherwise, we're going to get stuck. And I love that you normalized that, because that adds to my mission, normalizing no contact, normalizing it. Like, why should we have to allow toxic friends, toxic people, anyone toxic? We're kind of in a fight of our lives, right? Like, we're the only ones responsible for our mental health, for our physical health. And it's just cool how you tie that all together.
Oh, yeah. I to get where you've never been, you got to do what you've never done and become who you've never become. Like, that bottom line. So I couldn't agree more. And the name of all the programs I do is called the Me 2.0 program for that exact reason. So
really? Oh, I love that.
100% agree. Because you really are. I mean, you really are. As you're changing these habits, patterns, routines, as you're going through releasing some of this past trauma, working with these parts of you, you are becoming somewhat different.
And
you are changing the structure of your brain. So
yeah,
you really, truly are.
I love that. So talk to me on a practical level. As we enter a new friendship, as we are someone who's going out and dating, you know, we don't want to go back to a couple things. We don't want to go back to the way that we looked at life. We don't want to continue to choose toxic people. But back to trauma responses, we also don't want to be like, fuck everyone, everyone's bad. You know, fuck men, fuck women. Like, you know what I mean? Like, on a practical level, how can we open ourselves up just a little bit, even if we're still healing, even if a part of us is still the little crinkled ball, but we still want to live life? Like, what are some ways practically that we can look at the world, look at a human in front of us and say, okay, I'm going to take my chance. I'm going to trust this person until they give me a reason not to. Practically, how can we apply that to choosing friends, choosing a partner?
Yeah. So there's a couple of things. The first is I would have like people close to you that like, not just close to you, like get your mind examined. Like, it's hard to read the label from inside the bottle. And so having somebody that, whether it's a coach, whether it's a therapist, whether like I would suggest somebody that is like trained, and then having someone that's close to you as well, like a really good friend, a safe, really good friend you can be very vulnerable with, are two really good first steps. Because the coach or therapist, like for me, when I work with people, the reason people go into and get into so many abusive relationships over and over again is they have trauma baggage, past trauma that is creating their future. They take their past trauma, they bring it into the present with them, and then they look at the future through the lens of their past trauma and create the past in the future. And so being able to go work with that past baggage, that those past trauma responses, those little children inside of you that just want attention, love, and affection, and being able to give that to them yourself with a trained professional, that can be super helpful, because you won't go into a relationship now thinking I'm unlovable, I'm unworthy. I mean, surprise, surprise, going into a relationship with those beliefs doesn't usually work out very well. And so being able to go get that past baggage worked through would be a really good first step. And then as you start to get back out there, give yourself time before you get back. Because I work after abusive relationships a lot. So a huge phase of what I do is like dating again type of thing. But so give yourself time, right? Be single. How often in your life, like, do you actually have time to just be single and have no attachment to another human that you have to think about when you make decisions? Like, it's okay to be single. There's a really good movie on Netflix, How to Be Single, that
that's such a great movie. I love that movie.
It's kind of a funny movie. I was like, damn, this is kind of, I'm going to suggest this to my clients. But so be single, like that, be okay with that. And then, so give yourself some space there. And then when you start to get back out there, having somebody like really safe that you can be super vulnerable with, like for me, like it's one of my best friends, his name's Miles, love the dude to death. I'm able to just be real with him and be like, dude, is this, what is happening here? Like, I'm starting to get back out and dating again. It's the first date I've been on in freaking 4 years. Like, how do you start your conversations? What do you talk about? Like, can you be vulnerable? Like, how do you not present like a friend? What are you watching out for? And having someone that is like a friend, maybe they're not trained like a therapist, because Caitlin's my therapist. She helps me in one way. Miles helps me in another way. And just that you can just talk to him, like, dude, okay, this is what happened. I did this thing. And he's like, ah, dang, I've done that before. And just, there's no judgment. And so having that support system before getting out there again is huge. So freaking huge. to be able to help yourself. And then when you get out there, I like what you said, is opening yourself up just a little bit. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, is that a lot of the times people get stuck in this think loop, and mm-hmm. they're just thinking about it, as opposed to doing anything about it. Yeah. And I'm all about action, because your nervous system, it's one of the five basic functions of your nervous system, is to act. And so I help people understand, shift action from one thing to three things, and a cycle instead of a static thing. Mm-hmm. And so I call it the action cycle, and it's just a circle. And it's the scientific method, but for like humans, like in everyday life. And it's just act, assess, adjust, act, assess, adjust, act, assess, adjust. And so as you get out there and you act, you go on a first date, you go on a couple dates, whatever, take some time to assess with either like the person who can help you examine your mind, your friend, and just assess a little bit, and then kind of come up with, okay, did that work? Did I like that? Did I not like that? Like those types of things. And in that phase, they can help you figure out, like, did you really like it? Or is this a part of you that liked it? Or like, what does yes and no feel like in your body, and help you kind of assess more effectively, and then make the adjustment that you need to make, and shift the way that you behave a little bit, and having different perspectives. Cause then Miles is like, I'm a guy and I'm dating or talking to women. So Miles is a guy perspective, but I also have a friend, Jackie, who helps me from a woman's perspective as well. So I have both of those perspectives. Right, 100%. So in my adjustment phase. 100%. Yeah. And so they kind of, both of them, all three of them really help with like what's happening in this adjustment phase. And then I go act again, and act, assess, adjust. And if something doesn't go my way, or someone acts toxic, or someone, I start to get into a relationship that I shouldn't, or different things like that. I'm not like betting it all on one thing. It's the action cycle. And I just know my default is that cycle. And so I can't fail unless I fail to act, because then I'm alone. So those would be kind of the two, super powerful support system. And then the act, like, it's not one thing, it's the action cycle, would be a good way to start.
I love that. And can I dive more into your assess part of it? Because, you know, I mean, listen, red on the color spectrum, it can go from, you know, pale red to pretty red to bright stop sign red flag, right? Like, how do we ascertain the ambiguity of, is this a red flag? Is this something that can be worked with? You know, because I found, you know, a lot of people can struggle and be like, nope, these are my standards. I am not, which I think is badass. But also I went into the relationship with my husband like that. And I found I needed to, okay, is this like an actual bright red stop flag? Or is this a pink flag where it's not a deal killer? We could probably work through this. Like, how do you basically not throw away the baby with the bathwater and work through your own trauma while trying to work through and not get rid of someone who could potentially be a really beautiful part of your life?
The first step is not trying to figure that out in the middle of that relationship, would be step number one. So trying to figure out as many of your non-negotiables before you get back into dating, or you get back into these trying to form relationships with people, even if it's not dating, just relationships.
Right.
Figuring out as much as you can beforehand is huge. And there's usually some pretty common non-negotiables, like is it acceptable if you're in a relationship with someone, do they have to give you their location, and do you need their location? Mm-hmm. Must you have their passcode? Do you have to have their password to all of their social media accounts? Like, some of these are pretty clear things that you can kind of write down. And another Terry, not this one, wrote a really good book, Boundary Boss, Terry Cole, that goes through some of these different types of boundaries and stuff that you can examine and have before. And your support system can really help you with that as well. Because again, they're outside your bottle.
Right.
And it's hard to read the label inside the bottle. So they can really help with these types of things. And then your trauma responses and your different parts can help with this as well. Because a lot of the time people go in like parts led, meaning the anxious part of them is going into this conversation or going into this relationship, as opposed to their true self going into the relationship. And so in the deeper work that I work with people, I'm helping them become self-led as opposed to parts led, and get some separation between the part of them and their self. And when you go into something self-led, it's a whole different ball game. And you just know these things. and you know how to listen to your intuition when you're in the act, assess, suggest wheel or whatever, especially action. And you can make some of these decisions on the fly, but having your non-negotiables that you define and go steal them from other people.
Yeah.
Like if you hear a non-negotiable that you love, like one that I took from Terry Cole is in her thing. She's like, I will never date. A non-negotiable for me is an unexamined mind. If you have an unexamined mind, like you're not doing working with a coach, a therapist, someone to help you examine your mind, then that's a non-negotiable for me. I was like, that's a freaking great non-negotiable. I love that. So I stole it and made it my own. And she's never come after me for it. Surprise, surprise. Right? So please like steal them from other people and get some of these non-negotiables defined. Like think of financial boundaries. Think of personal boundaries. Think of relationship boundaries. Think of sexual boundaries. There's so many different types of boundaries that and categories that people don't think of. Technology boundaries, family boundaries that you can start to think about before you get into any of these things so that you're not in the middle trying to make a decision on the spot. So that's one thing is like very much do as much prep work as you can. Understanding an abuse cycle, like know what love bombing is and understand that if someone is opening up their deepest, darkest traumas, trying to get you to have sex with them on the first date and trying to do extravagant, crazy things with you, that might be love bombing potentially. And that's something to pay attention to and know the things to look out for. Know little tiny, generally it starts with little tiny criticisms that start at first. And then it turns into manipulation and then it turns into gaslighting. And so starting to understand some of those things and having the people outside your bottle to help you pay attention to those things can be super helpful as well in relation to red flags and flags in general.
So speaking of which, do you mind sharing a little bit about your experience with a narcissistic relationship?
Yeah, mine was inside of like a personal relationship. And it was, very, very like it's crazy when you think of like a common abuse cycle, it followed a very similar abuse cycle. We started out, it was really, really fast. A lot of emotions, really, really fast, love bombing, things like that. And I didn't think much of it. And then it wasn't just, we also did business together, which was questionable on my part. But we started to, that's where some of the criticism kind of started a little bit. It was like, well, maybe we shouldn't do that. We should do that. And kind of questioning my, like, I know what I want to do and try to do and like act, especially in a startup and business. It's kind of like, maybe I don't have all the answers, but my basic operating principle is I'm going to go just act and we'll figure it out. And so I'm going to fail a bunch of times, but I'll fail faster than others and I'll figure it out faster than others too, because people are too scared to even fail. So that's my basic principle, which didn't necessarily vibe super well. And so she started questioning some of things in the business side and in the relationship. And that's where, it just hurt people. Like, and it's not like I was perfect in this either, because I didn't stand up for myself in some of these situations and these boundaries, or I didn't establish hardcore boundaries. I had an idea where I was like kind of tilting my head a little bit, like, what the hell? Kind of, everybody knows that. I did this video recently actually where I did, it was a transition where I'm going in and out of the screen and it's the beginning of the relationship. And I was in like a full suit and I was like happy. And I was like, yeah, let's go. And then it was like 6 months in and I'm like in like just a collared shirt and I'm just kind of like tilting my head. And then a year in and I'm just like disheveled, like not shaven. And it was, that's kind of the perspective, if you will, or what I also experienced as well. Like, you just start to get isolated more. I was like, I'm not hanging out with my friends as much. I'm just not doing anything that I want to do, like my habits, patterns, routines, hobbies. I play a ton of basketball. Like I play now, I play like 2, 3, 4 times a week. But I stopped playing completely almost. I stopped hanging out with some of my close friends. Just got isolated. And it didn't get more overtly like what I would consider abusive necessarily, like hard, like hardcore abuse. And this is in my own work. When I work with people like this, I'm like, that is, you realize that it's very abusive. And they're like, well, it's not as bad. And
yes,
I do the same thing.
Yeah.
When I'm telling my own story. So just understand that as I'm explaining. But so I absolutely do that same thing. And towards the end, towards like the last probably 8 months, we had just become more friends. The masculine feminine pole in the relationship had flipped and it just, that was out of whack. The And it just got no bueno, not good. And then some attachment trauma, probably from her part, caused all sorts of chaos towards the end as we were starting to drift away, because there's a break in our attachment. And so that's where it got a little bit more like throwing things, yelling, screaming, like the big scary stuff, which was tough for me because I'm a big dude. Most people can't tell, but I'm like 6'6". I'm an enormous man. And so, so this little feisty human coming at me brings up all sorts of wild things in me, because I'm an athlete and I'm a big guy. And so in basketball, if someone is like coming at me, or like I can hit them, or not like hit them like, oh, I'm gonna fight, but like bump them in, like you can get out the aggression in a different way.
Right.
And so it's just such a weird, my nervous system, one part of me was like shooting all of this energy up through my body, like ready to like fight and like attack. And then another part of me top down was like, dude, what? No, like you are a gigantic man. This is a woman, like this, like you've got, and shoves all of that energy down.
Yeah.
And so I have this huge surge of like anger and rage, which is one of the most powerful emotions that can erupt up. And then I have a whole nother like cork that comes in and plugs it. And I just had to bottle it up, and I would like just like shake and like get really tight and tense and stuff. And I literally was just shoving these emotions, these hormones back into my muscle fibers. I would get migraines, I would get like terrible like headaches over the top of my head, all sorts of like really crappy stuff. I'm still like releasing some of that stuff.
Wow.
And that formed a dichotomy in me where one part of me gets super, super tense and tight and like holds things down, and like I hold my breath, I like squeeze my muscles, like, and I'm still working through some of these primitive reflexes, even still. And then the other part of me is like that anger part, and getting some of that, and being mad, and being allowed to be mad, and being like justified and healthy anger, and being disappointed and being sad and upset, and these types of things are some of the emotions that I just generally shove down or don't think about, that Caitlin, again, is helping me a lot with, and Miles helps me talk through some of that kind of stuff as well. But Caitlin helps me a lot with dealing with some of those things now, and working with those two, both those polarized parts of me, because they both have similar, they want to keep me safe, both of them, but they have different ways they do it. One is like the like big fight energy, like anger, rage, whatever. And the other is the like, no, shut that down and like shove that back.
Yeah.
That cannot come out because that is dangerous. And so they both want my safety, and they want me to be calm, cool, collected, and survive, but they have different agendas, and they're both parts of me, not me. So my true self wouldn't do necessarily either of those. It would navigate in a different way. So I have to bring some of that self energy to these parts to help them realize, oh, we're on the same team. And then also help them realize, hey, I'm no longer 4, 5, 6, 7 years old. We don't have to do the same trauma response anymore. Because this is not the first time that this, like, these parts, it's not the first time they showed up in my life. That's something else Caitlin's helped me with. So that's kind of, it's kind of the full circle. And then I'm starting to get back into dating, and I'm starting to realize there's all sorts of stuff that, as you start to get back into dating, you start to realize like going in like a first date and forever, like how to text, what to text, where to text, freaking figuring out apps, which I haven't downloaded a single one yet, because it's just like, oh dude, this, I'm not doing this. I'm just going to go visit people, talk to people in person. I'm like the golden retriever of humans.
Like in the wild.
Just go talk to somebody. Yeah.
It's, right.
So, but then I've heard that's a whole cognitive story. It's a whole thing. So I'm navigating a lot of that, and my parts around wanting control and wanting the fear around, oh, am I going to get into another like bad one? Like,
it's
all of the, so I'm actively out in the world doing those types of things. I call it getting on the court, right? Most people live their life from the bench, right? They're in the stands in their life, but you got to get on the court and live your life. Stop being a human doing, start being a human being. That's what I'm trying to embody right now too.
Okay. How are you able to disassociate all of your knowledge of trauma, all of your knowledge of everything you know, everything you've been through, and kind of detach yourself and sit across the table from someone and be like, I'm just going to have a conversation. I'm not going to think. Because we've been through a lot. We can tend to think about everything that we don't want, think about everything that we want, assess this person. Like, how do you just kind of go into a mode where you're just like, I'm relaxing and I'm just going to be in this moment right now?
Mm. Yeah, this is like the number one skill I've had to develop because I have very strong thinker and rationalizer, intellectualizer parts. And so IFS has a process. Internal Family Systems is the type of psychotherapy I'm trained in. It has a process of something called unblending. And so when you, what unblending is a lot of the times you go into things that this is a part of me and this is myself, my true self, like who I actually am. We go into these situations blended. And so I'm interacting with Terry as a part of Cody, as opposed to as my true self. And so what you're just describing is like, how do I like disassociate, is not necessarily disassociating, but is unblending. And so it's like taking that thinker part off of me and saying, hey, talking with it, literally, I have these conversations with myself. Caitlin helps me with it, but talking with this part, like, hey, I get it. You're really worried that this could go bad. And if you're not there to like think and control and figure this stuff out, that something bad could happen. Is that true? And this part will say, yeah. Like my biggest fear is that you get in another abusive relationship, you waste a bunch of years of your life, and then you're hurt again. I was like, man, I appreciate that. I really get that. Thank you so much for being there for me like that. And I show this part of me that is, I think this one's six, 6 years old. Hey, it's going to be okay. I'm safe now. And then I can unblend from that and get some space from that thinker part and just be. Okay, so when you're parts led, you're doing. When you're self led, you're being. And there's a big difference between doing and being. When you're being with somebody, the self is calm, it's connected, it's clear, it's compassionate, it's curious, it's connected, it's persistent, playful, like the patient, the eight C's and the five P's is what it's called, like when you're in self. And so that's how I can kind of start to understand, like in a conversation, how am I being? Am I being or am I doing? And then if I'm doing, what part of me is doing? And then I can go talk to that part and just in my own head now, I can be like, hey, I get it. Can we just for the next hour, would it be cool if you just sit on the side and just sit on the sideline and just watch the game? And if you feel like you have to jump in, you totally can. Like, would it be cool if you just trust me just for a couple, just for an hour and just see how that works? And then these parts of you are super tired oftentimes. And so they want to rest. And so a lot of the times, almost every time, they're like, okay, yeah, I'll sit on the side. And especially if you tell them, yeah, if you want to jump in, you can. And they just let you be.
Your
And
support.
so that's one of the big, like unblending is a humongous piece. I do it before sessions. I do it before I jump on here, just stop, breathe and be. Like it takes 15 seconds. As little as 15 seconds, as long as a couple minutes if you want, but being able to work with those parts and make sure that I'm unblended as often as possible, in those conversations, in those initial meetings and things like that. And being able to listen to that, knowing that my intuition or my spirit, or like there's so many different names for it. I call it the self, is what I call it myself. But trying to be in that state and be self-led is the best way that I've found to help navigate that. And it's really freaking hard. And I'm not perfect at it at all. Because the second they ask me, so what do you do? And or the second they ask me, well, tell me more about the brain. I'm like, bam, that thing jumps from the sideline. It's like, well, I'm funny you should ask. And I go right into that mode.
All of a sudden lists all the non-negotiables.
Well, it's just like, dude, let's go. Like, and I'm less non-negotiables. For me, it's more just completely open, free, uncaring, like just sharing like everything. Like, I don't care that much, and I want to talk about like things that I'm passionate about. So,
Yeah, which is good.
it's definitely a process, and it takes time, but it is possible, and it's a journey, not a destination. People come to me, how long is it going to take till I'm healed? I was like, well, healing is not like a state; it is a thing you constantly do. So, that's kind of the way that I try to think about it, and I do not pretend to be perfect at it in any way at all. Like and I even tell my clients that. I was like, if I have a part that pops up in a session, I was like, oh, I have a thinker part that just popped up. Let me just take a second here and make sure myself is with you.
Oh,
And
that's
just being
nice.
open and transparent with that as often as I can. Like I'm not doing that on first dates necessarily. Like this part of me and then this other part of me and this one's named Mama. Jerry, and like, I'm not necessarily not doing that, but
That's great. Cody, you've already helped so many people. Tell me what the future looks like for you.
so my ultimate vision and purpose is to create a human AI operating system to unite humanity, shift human evolution, and help everyone create happiness and purpose in their life. And so what I'm trying to do is ultimately blend the things that I'm doing together into like one thing, if you will. So My Companion, which is the AI trauma therapist in your pocket, Mind Brain Mind Lab, and the services that I provide there, the content that I do with people, and the data that I collect in all three of them, being able to combine that into one central spot that becomes like truly like a operating system that can help people aggregate their data, help with create a heroic story out of their life and a game out of their life and their healing, so that they can like continue to like level up, if you will, and become constantly like help them along that journey. Because again, it's not a destination, it's a journey. Like there's always something new. The first game that I'm really trying to help people with is mental and emotional health. But then eventually I want to be able to help people with all sorts of different things, like general things. You want to learn how to play piano, you want to right, and generalize it a little bit more. But there's tons that needs to be done at the very core. I believe pretty firmly that at the core of most mental and emotional health issues is trauma, and things, unresolved trauma. 87, almost 90% of people have experienced some trauma in their life, and 87% of those people are unaware that it affected them in the way that it did, and it's now leading to the thing that, oh, I have IBS. It must be something physical. Maybe not. We should talk mentally and emotionally, what's going on. And so it'll start absolutely with mental, emotional, and trauma work, but I do want to eventually branch out to other things and different types of technologies, neurotech, biotech, nanotech, that we can integrate into some of the software side of what we're doing.
So cool.
To help more people. I mean, ultimately it's, and provide it for free to low cost. Free as soon as possible. I'm going to get to free, completely for free, with because it's not innovation if poor people can't afford it. And so being able to help those people, like we want to help a billion people. If we help a billion people, you become a billionaire, right? That's a real way to be a billionaire, is to help a billion people. If you ask me. So
I love that.
That's the ultimate vision. Yeah,
that's so cool. Cody, you are fascinating. I could talk with you for the next 2 hours. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for being vulnerable, and thank you for encapsulating all of your knowledge the way that you did, because I know we could have expounded upon each of these topics, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
So thank you so much. You've been a pleasure and a blessing to have. Hope we stay in touch.
For sure. Yeah. Thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate you, the work that you're doing as well. You are a light to many people. So I told you before, and I'll tell you again, the world is better because you're in it. So I appreciate it.
Cody, I appreciate it. Thank you so much. And how can everyone find you?
Yeah, it's Mind Brain Body Lab everywhere. MindBrainBodyLab.com, any social media. If you want to email me, it's just Cody@MindBrainBodyLab.com. But yeah, Mind Brain Body Lab, wherever you look.
Yeah. And I'll link all of that in the show notes. So have a beautiful day, and thank you so much for being here, Cody.
For sure. Thanks for having
me. All right. Cheers till next time, friends. All right. I'm so sorry my child interrupted us.
It's all right.